You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we return here with another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire. This episode is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's an unofficial community center. A big thank you to our friends at McDonald's for always being there. I'm loving it. And I am loving this Ravens team right now as they are 5-1, defeating the Los Angeles Chargers 34-6 in week six. And here to dive into it with us today is Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. Before we dive into that conversation, though, be sure to follow us if you aren't already anywhere you get your podcasts, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. You can find our content Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. If you're following along with us here on YouTube in video form, be sure to subscribe to the channel. Like the video if you are enjoying our content. Our goal here is 1,000 subscribers on Locked On Ravens. So with all that being said, let's dive into our conversation here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. Here with me again for another Taco Tuesday episode is the one and only Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. Spencer, this team just continues to defy the odds, I guess. This is a good football team, but after the injuries, a lot of people were kind of wondering how good could this team be? And they are now 5-1 after defeating a very good Chargers team 34-6 in week six. How are you doing today?
Doing quite well, and you're exactly right. If they were 4-2, if they were 3-3, you know, no one would be pointing any fingers. There would be plenty of excuses that would be perfectly reasonable, and it's not the case. They could very well be the number one seed in the AFC going into week seven.
Yeah, I mean, so many things went wrong for them at least before the season with the injuries happening, and a lot of people thought that maybe that would do them in almost, but here they are now at the top of the AFC North, potentially at the top of the AFC, depending on what happens here in this Monday night game. But Spencer, starting off with the offense, diving into this game against the Chargers, because it was a very impressive win, their most dominant win of the 2021 season. The Ravens putting up 34 points against this Chargers defense, which had struggled against the run. They were the worst rushing defense heading into this one. They did have playmakers in their secondary. Lamar Jackson, you know, didn't have the most stat-stuffing game in the world. 19-27, 167 yards, one touchdown, and two interceptions also contributed on the ground. What did you see out of him in this one? Because overall, I thought he played pretty well.
For sure. This was one of those games where you look at the box score and you could say, oh, well, you know, Lamar Jackson wasn't great, but I thought he was pretty good. I don't think he had an excellent day, but I think he had a pretty good day. He throws one interception where he simply just doesn't see a rat sitting in the hole, a linebacker there, a ball that if he did, he probably just would have put out in front of Rashad Bateman and would have been a big gain. So it was the right read, just missed something. The other one bounces off Rashad Bateman's chest, ends up, you know, getting tipped, getting picked by a great diving, you know, spectacular play on the ball by the Chargers linebacker, Kaiser, I believe, and able to, you know, shake those off. No problem, no harm, no foul. Was super poised in the pocket, a lot, you know, took a couple sacks because of it. Even he was hanging out for a long time surveying. I think the Ravens did a good job, you know, using chips from Pat Ricard and Eric Tomlinson and Mark Andrews and the backs. So it gave Lamar time, but it meant there was less guys running routes. So it took a while for some of those things to develop. He didn't make every throw, but he made most of them. Nobody's perfect. At least in, you know, those days rarely happen unless your name's Aaron Rodgers, maybe, but it was a good performance. He ran effectively. He took care of himself. And aside from really just that one instance of just simply not seeing a defender there, I thought he took good care of the football. He orchestrated the offense well. He milked the clock with a lead. The Ravens were able to do some really good things in the run game. He picked up throws through the air. And the Chargers, the goal of that defense there, they used those two high safeties because they don't want anything going over their heads. The entire purpose is to prevent explosive passing plays 20 or more yards from happening. So Lamar can cut you up underneath if you want him to, and he did. So we've seen him really have a well-rounded start to the season. He's been able to push the ball downfield when he was able to, and he's been able to pick apart the last two teams he's played, who both have some, you know, stout defenses and front sevens and things in different ways, and some big-name players, Darius Leonard, DeForest Buckner, Joey Bosa, Derwin James, and picked him apart underneath, made plays with his legs when he needed to, facilitated the ball. It felt like everybody got involved for the most part. So it was a strong day from Lamar Jackson, a strong day for the offense. And I think the Ravens did a good job. I think Greg Roman has done a really nice job in the last couple of weeks, just helping out an offensive line that's had some injuries and some guys in different spots than they anticipated and things of that nature. So it started to feel a little bit like 2019 in ways, in the sense that with Eric Tomlinson currently playing the Nick Boyle role and doing a darn good job, one of the best blocking tight ends right now might be Eric Tomlinson. So that's given them plenty of time to not have to rush Boyle back. But when he does come back, that's going to be even scarier because they're using Ricard. They're using Tomlinson. They're using six offensive line sets at times and using those guys to really help out this offensive line, doing things like going into empty, no running backs back there, having Latavius Murray as kind of like a left tight end and Pat Ricard as a right tight end, and just giving a seven-man protection for that offensive line. So Pat McCary can get up to speed and Villanueva can feel comfortable, and those three kind of a little bit more experienced guys on the inside can bust some skulls together and do some good things. And I think that's been a nice development by Greg Roman and something he should have done, but we should still give him credit for. So it's been a good start to the year, and it was a good game so overall for Lamar Jackson and this offense.
Yeah, and for Roman, I do want to give him some credit. There have been bad quarters. I know we talked about that before we started recording. But overall, he's adjusted very well, I think, you know, not sticking with one thing the entire time. When something isn't working, he's doing a better job this year, I think, of adjusting, which last year a lot of people got on him for. And he's I think, putting Lamar Jackson in those situations to succeed. So I definitely agree on Roman. But Spencer, you mentioned the run game. And I did talk about this Chargers defense. And while they did have some playmakers in the secondary, the run defense, not really there. The worst run defense in the league heading into week six. And the Ravens, after averaging 3.4 yards per carry in week five against Indianapolis, come back against Los Angeles. An average 4.9 as a team, a very balanced effort overall. All three active running backs had a touchdown with Devonta Freeman, Latavius Murray, and Le'Veon Bell. Lamar Jackson also contributed on the ground. What did you see out of this Ravens run game? And are you pleased with how they divvied up the workload?
Yeah, for sure. And obviously Murray has continued to impress me as just a big back. He's not the most elusive runner. He did break a couple tackles in this game. He's not, you know, I think he's been nice in the past game. I think he's been a nice blocker and caught a couple passes underneath, but he seems to really have started to get some confidence, which is unfortunate because it looks like he's probably going to at least miss this game, if not a few, with an ankle injury. We'll hear more about that, I'm sure, in the next couple of days. But yeah, Le'Veon Bell starting to get involved. Devonta Freeman has been really impressive. Those are two guys I wasn't super high on them bringing in. I would have liked them to explore some other options, and I was totally wrong. They've been really impressive. Devonta Freeman has had the vision. He's had the burst. He's been patient. He's been decisive. Whatever you need him to do, he's been a nice piece in the pass game. He had a really strong game last week in the pass game against the Colts, and then comes out and contributes again today. He's getting to the perimeter. And it feels like he's the option back. He's the one that they like taking some of those outside handoffs and running some of the different option concepts that Greg Roman likes to call. So feels like they're confident there. And Le'Veon Bell is you know, he still has some patience to him. That's the classic Le'Veon Bell trait, but he continues to advance up the field while being patient and really can wait for things. And so I think Greg Roman's done a good job calling plays to suit that. And a lot of it, again, I'm going to talk about Tomlinson and Ricard again. They really bullied the Chargers. They were able to work combo blocks using, you know, them to help out offensive linemen on guys like Joey Bosa, and then went and took advantage of the Chargers' reserve inside linebackers and really sealed them off. There were several times where, for instance, the Latavius Murray touchdown early on, there was nobody making a play on Latavius Murray. I think that they've been really sound in their hand usage and their eyes working from the first level to the second level and continuing to clear things out. I think we've quietly seen guys like Marquise Brown start to be smart blockers even. He's not going to really go crush someone, but he knows how to set a screen basically like in basketball. He knows how to cut someone's angle off and, you know, just give a helping hand out of the way. I think Rashad Bateman had a couple of nice blocks from what I saw as well. And Devin Duvernay is taking over in that Willie Snead move H-back role where he's working in motion as well with Pat Ricard and able to go advance and block some linebackers and block some safeties. So this run game feels confident. They are continuing to run more zone scheme stuff. Bradley Bozeman gets banged up pretty bad after Latavius Murray runs into his back. Tristan Colon Castillo comes in. And, you know, I haven't been able to discerningly watch any coaches' tape yet. It hasn't come out yet, but it seemed like they didn't really miss a beat. The Chargers knew they were going to run the ball. They were still able to churn out some first downs, milk the clock, keep the clock moving. And I think play action is also a big reason for it, too. They've been hyper-aggressive on play action. Lamar Jackson likes to push the ball down the field using play action. So it's going to create some flat feet in those linebackers if they're, you know, anticipating play action, you know, don't want to take themselves away from the middle of the field, and then boom, it's a quick handoff instead of play action and opening things up. So more so than in the last couple of years, the pass game has been assisting the run game, where it feels like it's been vice versa. So like you just mentioned, Greg Roman's done a good job advancing throughout games, not being stale, not regurgitating things. It feels like it's they have more veterans overall. So I think they've done a really nice job.
Yeah, I agree with you, Spencer. And speaking of the pass game, I don't think I could go to the first break without talking about Rashad Bateman and the rest of the passing offense, obviously. But Bateman was a huge storyline coming into this one, his NFL debut. So many people anticipating, and I mean myself included. And Bateman turns in a pretty good performance overall, catches four passes for 29 yards, each of those catches going for a first down. He had six targets, tied for the team lead with Mark Andrews, so it seemed like Lamar Jackson, you know, was looking his way pretty often in this one. Did have the drop that bounced off of his chest into the Chargers defender's hand, so that goes on the stat sheet as an interception for Lamar Jackson. But for Bateman in particular, and even diving into the rest of the passing offense, how impressed were you?
Definitely really impressed. He exceeded expectations coming off of an injury that was really concerning. One that you're worried about explosiveness, about mobility in general, flexibility, tons of things. And even John Harbaugh said today that he ended up playing a lot more than what they had planned out. That was just the way the game went. Didn't seem like he was running a ton of deep routes. It was a lot of underneath work in the middle of the field. And for a receiver coming off of an injury to make his NFL debut, you know, almost halfway towards into the year, and be able to work the middle of the field that way was really nice. He does have that drop, which Matt Waldman, who does the rookie scouting portfolio, had a really nice video on, and just hand placement, throw the soccer balls at him, make him adjust, just like you've been doing with Hollywood. And that was something that we saw on Rashad Bateman's tape. Really, the Achilles heel in his scouting report is that he likes to run through the catch. He doesn't always have the best hand placement when he tries to do that. But the other end of that seesaw, or of that dual-edged sword, is that when he does run through the catch, he is fast, he is elusive, and it will beat pursuit angles because he's not going to slow up. He wants to, you know, step right on your throat and run right through a catch and take it the distance. So there's going to be some of those, and that's what it is. And younger receivers tend to drop more passes a lot of the time, so those are going to come, and that's part of it. But he looked elusive. He looked like he was playing confidently, considering his injury, everything in between. So for him to be able to go confidently play 45 snaps in this game, I think was a little bit of a surprise, honestly, and in a good way. So he had four catches for four first downs before that little drop there. But let's give some credit on that interception too. Kaiser made a great break on the ball after it hit off of him at caromed. And if the ball hit the ground, we're not talking about it as much. It's just, you know, it had a drop. It's not a big deal. So I think Bateman looked way better than I even expected, considering his injury. And he looks like the Bateman that the Ravens drafted. I do think he looks a little bit thin. I think he might have lost some weight in the process of trying to rehab from that injury. But, you know, he'll be able to get that back in the offseason. And right now it looks like he's ready to contribute, ready to be an underneath kind of security blanket type receiver. And maybe over the next couple of weeks and coming out of the bye in a couple of weeks, the Ravens will be able to start pushing the ball down the field to him and see what he can do over top. So it's really exciting. It's a fun time to have him be integrated into this offense. And it was a great game to get him going.
Yeah, I think so too, Spencer. And with the Ravens losing Sammy Watkins, hopefully he'll be back soon. Getting Bateman back right as Watkins was kind of departing for his injury, it gave them a nice weapon in there. And you mentioned how the Ravens and John Harbaugh said, yeah, we weren't expecting to play him that much, but he did look good. And with Watkins not out there, it gave Bateman a couple of opportunities. But, you know, they put James Purcell in situations which have been really good, and he's looked good. Devin Duvernay, same thing, and obviously Marquise Brown. So the Ravens, they have depth at wide receiver this year, and Bateman certainly adds to it. We're going to head into our first break, though. When we return, we're going to be diving into the Ravens' defense and how they stifled that Los Angeles offense led by Justin Herbert. So stay tuned for that. And we will be right back. But this episode of Locked On Ravens is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving community since 1965. McDonald's has always been more than just a place to get tasty, affordable food. It's a place where friends and family can come to reconnect. So head to your local McDonald's to refuel and reconnect. And did someone say Locked On Ravens watch party? You can talk about McDonald's everywhere you can get food. It's one of the best places out there. I'm loving it. We return here with our second segment of this Locked On Ravens Taco Tuesday episode. Kevin Ostreicher still here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, looking at this Ravens defense and how they were able to stifle this Los Angeles offense, I mean, so many things went into it, but just a couple of team stats to start things off. The Chargers held to just 3 of 12 on third down, 1 of 4 on fourth down, 2.2 yards per rush, 4.4 yards per pass. I mean, this was a very dominant and impressive defensive performance. How did this defense come out and just really never let Justin Herbert and this offense get going?
Well, it felt like the Chargers wanted to use screens and see if the Ravens would miss tackles, and they didn't. The Ravens seemed a lot more controlled in this game. They were playing with their shoulders square to their to the ball carrier, not taking bad angles, things of that nature. Josh Bynes comes in, plays, I believe, 43 snaps in this game, especially once Patrick Queen gets hurt, really stepped up. He was aggressive. He seemed to be right on top of what the Chargers wanted to do, especially in the run game, made a few game plays in the passing game. I think it was nice and helped get this defense aligned a little bit more properly. Took a little bit off of Patrick Queen's plate pre-snap and felt like it allowed him to play really well. I also think Deshaun Elliott comes back into a unit that has Deshaun Elliott, Chuck Clark, Jimmy Smith, Tavon Young, Anthony Averett, and Marlon Humphrey for the first time this season. So it was really nice to see them all gel together. It feels like Deshaun Elliott has had a lot more experience, and that also allows Brandon Stevens to be used as more of a matchup player that doesn't have to think as much, doesn't have to worry about getting beat over top, things of that nature. So it felt like the secondary was a lot more confident, a lot more communicative, had a lot more ability to disguise coverages and do some things really late, because Brandon Stevens, a rookie, starting for the first time, a little bit ahead of schedule, you didn't want to put him in a position to fail if you're Wink Martindale. So I think that allowing him to play more loosely in the box and up towards the line of scrimmage in his usage, as opposed to Deshaun Elliott and Chuck Clark being able to run games and do things against Justin Herbert, was key. I was a little bit surprised by the Chargers' lack of maybe creativity in their offensive game plan. I think if they were to use some option runs or some option looks a little bit more, do a couple different things. I think their lack of speed at the skill positions was exposed in this game. The Ravens are not really a team that you can go throw jump balls against consistently. With Marlon Humphrey and Jimmy Smith back there, Deshaun Elliott, even Anthony Averett had a really strong game in this one. Felt like he might get picked on after the game he had against Indianapolis, and wasn't the case. Maybe Anthony Averett's best game of the year. He was really sticky in coverage, let up a couple things underneath, but had tight coverage on Keenan Allen late in the game that drew an offensive pass interference, made a couple plays in the run game, and I think he looked really strong as well. So this is about as healthy as the Ravens are going to see this secondary. They're going to get Chris Westry back at some point, and he's probably going to be a little slow to recover from that meniscus once he is able to kind of get going again. But them being healthy right now is really the key of this defense, and I think it showed, because this defense is paid for and built back to front with that secondary. So them being healthy and then also having Adafe Owe and Justin Houston and Tyus Bowser and Calais Campbell and Justin Matabike and all those guys helped as well. But felt like they did a nice job. They had a beat for what the Chargers wanted to do. Wink Martindale gave plenty of looks and late, pre and post snap looks and coverage. And I think it impacted Justin Herbert's ability to get things done. And ultimately it was a really strong game from the Ravens defense. They missed very few tackles. They didn't commit any egregious penalties, so it was a disciplined game and a good defensive game plan from a healthy defense at home.
Yeah, I think so too, Spencer. And a player who I did want to ask you about, because he's definitely been a controversial player this season, obviously Patrick Queen has not had the start to the season that many were anticipating, especially after his preseason and what he showed, a very strong week one game as well. But in this game, I thought he looked a lot better. I think, obviously, that might have been the Josh Bynes effect, having a veteran next to Queen who understands the game a bit more and is just a solid veteran presence. I think that helped Queen play a bit more freely. And unfortunately, Queen goes out with that injury, is kind of in and out for the rest of the game. But in his snaps, I thought he looked a bit better. So what was your overall assessment of what Queen brought to the table in week 6, but also Bynes as well?
Bynes definitely was pre-snap identifying and eliminating possibilities. You could see him communicating. You could see him setting the front. You could see late movement from the linebackers into certain gaps. There was a particular play where Bynes basically sets the front, IDs the motion, and knows exactly what's coming. It ends up being a power. He sees the left guard pull. As soon as the left guard takes a step to pull, he shoots right into the B gap where the guard would have been going. He basically shoots his hands into Jared Cook, sets him back in the line of behind the line of scrimmage, and then forced Austin Ekeler to have to cut back into some traffic. So I think Josh Bynes was outstanding. He also ran the alley on a pitch play really well. It was good pursuit. You saw him able to use the sideline to his advantage. He pursued the back's back hip, stayed square to the back's back hip, and prevented him from being able to cut back, lays a big hit, gets a tackle for loss. And I think that was a good theme of this defense overall. It was playing under control and not overcommitting, not allowing cutback lanes, not over pursuing. It was staying square to the line of scrimmage. I think that's what Patrick Queen did well. I think he only played 19 snaps. He was playing the entire first quarter, gets the thigh injury on a nice play he had. The Chargers had a quick little deceptive route to Keenan Allen in the flat. Him and Chuck Clark go end the play, and his thigh gets banged up. But I think he had three or four really positive plays in the first quarter and then was able to come back from the injury. Then it's the fourth quarter, and they just let Malik Harrison play instead because the game was, you know, it was a 30-point game at that point. So I think it was nice. I think Malik Harrison looked a little bit more calm. We saw a good bit of Chris Board as well. So I think it's just really a lot of it has to do with just playing under control. And if you're unsure, making a mistake hard instead of making a tentative mistake. It's you know, keeping yourself clean. Queen ends up delivering a devastating shot to Austin, or I believe it was actually Jackson, the running back, Justin Jackson, at one point on a second and short. So for me, the biggest thing is him just keeping his eyes, his shoulders, his hips, and his feet all in unison, all square to where he wants to go, staying in neutral, so to speak, a lot of the time, and working himself back to neutral using his hips and his eyes and his feet. So all those things working together. And saw a really beautiful play in the first quarter where Justin Herbert is trying to throw an RPO, and you watch Queen basically read Herbert's eyes, stay square with Herbert, stay in neutral, take away a slant, take away a deeper slant, and then start to work back towards the other side of the field. Herbert has to throw the ball away, as that gave time for Odafe Oweh to come in and get a pressure. So playing under control is the name of the game for Queen and for this Ravens defense. And if they're able to do that, the offense is scoring so many points. They're fourth in the NFL in scoring right now. They don't have to play as well as they did Sunday. Ravens could have let up another touchdown on defense. They could have let up another 10 points, and it really wouldn't have been that big of a deal. So they have a lot of margin for error, and that allows them to be aggressive in certain situations. So understanding the you know, losing battles to win wars at certain point is something that they can still work on. But this was about as good of a game as you could have expected, or I don't think anyone really expected them to play this well this past week. So it was an awesome game from them. You got to give credit to Wink Martindale. He definitely confused the heck out of Justin Herbert. Deshaun Elliott comes back, felt like he had a good impact. So all those things ended up being a beautiful, beautiful game for the Ravens defense.
Yeah, it was well-balanced overall. You talk about the defense, the offense, even special teams really balanced. And, you know, going back to Queen for a second, Spencer, I feel like for a player like Queen and how young he is and him playing through his mistakes, that's something that on a contending team, you know, you want to look at people who are kind of magnifying those mistakes. When a player plays through their mistakes on a non-contending team, it's a little more acceptable. Because, you know, you have the time and people are saying, well, you know, in 3-4 years when this team is contending, well, that's fine. And he can play through those mistakes now. But on a Ravens team where they're now 5-1, and even before they had lost the opening game, now they're on that 5-game winning streak. Those mistakes suddenly for a lot of people become like, all right, those can't happen or else he's a terrible player. Where if this team was 1-4 or 2-3, I think we're looking at Queen's season a lot differently because of the fact that, you know, all right, this is a lost year. He can continue to grow. But now that they're contending, Queen's now under that microscope and he's getting a lot of flack that, you know, I don't think it is all warranted. Like, yes, the criticism, that there's some of it and it should be there. But overall, Queen is a player who's still so, so young. And you want to throw Malik Harrison in this category, you know, we can do that too. But, you know, for a contending team, mistakes are a lot less acceptable, I'll say, instead of a non-contending team. So just a bit of weird perspective about just how a situation and a record can change something like that. We're going to head into our final break, though. When we return, we're going to be diving into what's up next for this Baltimore Ravens team, a divisional matchup. So stay tuned for that, and we will be back soon. But in life, we're all bound for different things. With beachbound.com vacations, you could be bound for adventure, bound for passion, bound for discovery, or bound for togetherness. Bound for immersion, bound for rejuvenation, or you may be bound for encountering the unexpected. With beachbound.com, you can find the perfect beach vacation for you no matter what you're looking for. What are you bound for? Visit beachbound.com today. And this episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand the warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Rock Auto prices are reliably low for every customer. So go to rockauto.com right now and see the parts available for your car or truck. Right Locked On and they had you hear about us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. We return here, our final segment of this Taco Tuesday edition of Locked On Ravens. Kevin Ostrecker still here with Spencer Schultz of Baltimore Beatdown. And Spencer, week 7 features a matchup between the number 1 and number 2 teams in the AFC North. In the Baltimore Ravens, the number 1, the Cincinnati Bengals coming in at 4-2 in that number 2 spot. The Bengals look like a much improved team this year with Joe Burrow slinging the football at a high level, Jamar Chase making a high level impact there. The defense added some pieces in the offseason that are working out so far. How do you feel like this Ravens team matches up against this, you know, new and improved Cincinnati team?
This Cincinnati team has, you know, increased play from Joe Burrow in some ways. And really last year before the injury, Joe Burrow was playing really well. So I don't think any of that's surprising. It was really funny. A couple of Bengals, you know, content creators that I interact with, like Mike Sands, who I believe does Locked On Bengals as well. Not really sweating much over this training camp and all the hubbub about drops and Joe Burrow looks rusty. It was like, oh, the second year quarterback coming off of a torn ACL looks rusty in his first couple weeks back at practice. Shocker. Everybody panicked over Jamar Chase, which was really funny, all those things. But what got lost is that this Bengals defense invested a lot of capital on free agents, on draft picks, all those good things. They bring in a slew of kind of, you know, solid cornerbacks. And the one who's really stuck is Shadobia Awuzie at this point. Played a really strong game against Davante Adams. You look at that game, you say, oh, what do you mean? Davante Adams had 200 yards. I believe he covered Adams on like 13 routes and held him to one catch on those routes. So Awuzie, strong player there. Obviously, Jesse Bates, a guy that the Ravens are familiar with and has played really well. They also go get Trey Hendrickson. They let Carl Lawson go, bringing Trey Hendrickson. He's been really strong. Mike Hilton, the slot corner, you know, the nickel corner from the Steelers, one of the best blitzers, one of the best box nickels, kind of similar to Tavon Young over the last couple of years. He's been really great. Their linebackers have had really great development. Logan Wilson, Akeem Davis Gaither, two guys I absolutely loved out of the NFL draft. Akeem Davis Gaither, kind of that Isaiah Simmons light, kind of not quite the big dude that Isaiah Simmons is, but he can play in some different positions, play in some different ways, be utilized, and is really effective stopping RPOs and matching up against backs and tight ends. Logan Wilson, a really smart, physical, you know, really fast and good in coverage linebacker. So they also get DJ Reader back. The defensive line has some more meat there. They also have Tyler Shelton. So that defense overall is a really solid, well-coached unit that has talent. They have balance. They have depth. They have good coaching overall. So that defense is legit. You know, they played with the Packers for 5 quarters, even though there were a ton of missed field goals and whatever. But that defense is really nice. They're coming off of a shutout. And you also know that Joe Burrow, based on some comments last week, he alluded to that he knew he was going to see cover 0, which reminded him of the Ravens because he was playing against the Jaguars and Joe Cullen. So on third down, he was expecting cover 0. So I think Joe Burrow looks back at that Ravens game from last year, the one that he did play in, and I think that might have been really the low point in his football career over the last couple of years, aside from the injury, obviously, he suffers. But in-game and failure that he felt, I wouldn't be surprised if he's watched that game 20, 30 times by now. So he's a madman, and I think if the Ravens want to go use some of these blitzes, I think Joe Burrow is going to have some answers. I think he's going to have some fast, quick screen answers. I think this offense can do a lot of things. So this Cincinnati team is good. There was the big debate, Penny Sewell versus Jamar Chase. For me, it would have been Rashawn Slater, but hey, Sewell and Slater both look like great players. But ultimately, you know, I wasn't so sure about Riley Reiff being the acquisition to come in and play tackle opposite of Jonah Williams. And ultimately, they made the right decision. Jamar Chase is playing at, you know, a Hall of Fame start to his career, pretty much. Not many receivers start like he did and don't turn out to be truly elite. We watched Justin Jefferson do it last year. Both of those guys have somehow managed to top what Randy Moss did as a rookie, which was incredible. So Jamar Chase, a freak of nature right now. They also have T. Higgins. They also have Tyler Boyd. They, you know, Joe Mixon. So they're doing some good things. C.J. Uzomah, I think, is an underrated tight end. And overall, long story short, they've got talent. They've got depth. They're hungry. And this team was overlooked. I got mocked a little bit and scoffed at because I thought this. I said I don't see why the Bengals can't be a 7-win team. Well, they're 3 wins away from it right now and looking like they're a real playoff threat. So don't be surprised if the Bengals have some answers for the Ravens that they've been waiting on and haven't really been able to implement until they've had enough talent to do so. So this is going to be an exciting game. It's the first divisional game for Baltimore, and they're going to get rolling here.
Yeah, the first divisional game for Baltimore and the last until week 12, where they'll have five of those last seven against divisional opponents there. But Spencer, to wrap this show up, I actually just thought of something. I think it was you who tweeted about the 2018 draft class or just the guys that they have to extend. You know, Lamar Jackson obviously in that conversation now with the way Anthony Averett has played for most of this year, Deshaun Elliott and what he's doing, Bradley Bozeman. They already gave Mark Andrews his extension. There are a lot of guys who are up for big money extensions, especially with how they're playing really well in contract years. So when you look at those four, you know, we can just narrow it down to Jackson, Averett, Bozeman, and Elliott. Do you see any situation where the Ravens can re-sign all four of those guys with the way they're playing? And if they can't, who would you let walk out of that group?
I definitely think there is possibility. One of the intriguing options to me is, and who knows, there's a lot to this that I'll never know about, but one of those intriguing options is maybe letting Lamar Jackson get into that fifth year without, you know, extending him all the way yet. They should lock him up and maybe pay him $1 billion. He's the best right now, but that's an intriguing option just to see and, you know, financially what they're able to do with cap hits and how long they can wait. Of course, you do not want to aggravate Lamar Jackson 1% in this situation. So if that is not something that he is willing to participate in, then do not knock on that door. But yeah, the Ravens have about $28 million right now. They are in a really rough situation with Ronnie Stanley, who looks like he's probably going to get shut down for the year, seeing as the Ravens just signed or were awarded Knight from the Cowboys practice squad. So he's going to be on the active roster, Brandon Knight. And so it looks like Stanley's going to get shut down. He has an $18 million cap hit. They have some questions with Marcus Peters, coming off the ACL versus maybe Anthony Averett, some things like that. So I do think that the Ravens could manage it. They could definitely finagle it. The one thing people don't look at is that if you give out big contracts, and let's say maybe, of course, aside from Lamar Jackson, but if you give Bradley Bozeman a 4 or 5 year deal, then he's not going to have a very big cap hit next year. So it's not going to be immediately taking $10 million off of your books to have Bradley Bozeman signed to a long-term deal. So if you want to lock up Bozeman and Averett and Elliott to 3 or 4 or 5 year deals at least, then it's not going to cost that much next year. And you also are going to have a slew of picks in the top 100 and top 150 next year. I think the Ravens have, what, 7 picks in the first 4 rounds right now. So they're in a good shape there. But if you can't keep all of them and you got to start making decisions, I think you absolutely have to keep Bradley Bozeman. This deal at center has been long and hard and has not been fun to deal with between Skura and Zuda and going all the way back to Burke and Brown, all these guys. Over the last decade, the Ravens have had like 7 different centers. So at some point, you got to end that cycle. Bradley Bozeman's playing well. He's smart. Ravens seem to be playing well because of him and things he's doing with setting the front and setting the protection. So I think he's the one you got to keep. Aside from Lamar, then that puts it between Deshaun Elliott and Anthony Averett. And that's a really tough conversation because, you know, Brandon Stevens is behind Deshaun Elliott. And it looks like Brandon Stevens might have a lot of similarities to Deshaun Elliott in terms of physicality, tackling ability, athleticism, some man coverage skill, you know, developing. At the same time, Marcus Peters is kind of a question mark. You might need to use him, you know, as a little way to create some cap room in some ways. But beyond Marlon Humphrey, you know, you've got Tavon Young and not a lot else going on. So, in terms of boundary corner, it seems like you might be a little thinner there. And cornerback is the position that above all else, the Ravens absolutely always crumble defensively when they don't have the cornerbacks. So I think that the scale might lean 51% Averett, 49% Elliott. And then ultimately I might end up going with Averett there, but I want to keep Elliott, I want to keep Averett, I want to keep Bozeman. They've got $28 million right now as things stand. There are certainly avenues to create some money and do some different things and maybe have another modest free agent year and bring in another giant draft class to be their free agent class. So a lot of decisions, you know, Brandon Williams, question mark, Calais Campbell, a question mark, some more things going on beyond that. So at some point you got to be able to make some hard decisions and the Ravens are going to have some, but the cap is going up and Lamar Jackson, you know, I would have to double check, but even if he's playing on that fifth year deal, it might lower his cap hit actually to extend him. Patrick Mahomes, I think, only had a $9 million cap hit in year one. I don't think Josh Allen has a mighty cap hit in year one. So maybe extending Lamar is the key to keeping the other three. I would have to look it over the cap and get into that. And that's something we can talk about maybe next week, but some tough decisions. But right now, you know, they're in a tough spot. They're probably going to need to shore up something ahead of the trade deadline, whether, you know, it's the offensive line or the secondary. Those feel like the two areas to look. So they don't have a lot of money to do that. And I'm curious to see how they pursue doing that after trading for Marcus Peters and trading for Yanni Kangakwe at the deadline each of the last 2 years, going discount, double check, bargain shopping towards a trade deadline defensively. So that's going to be interesting to watch as we're creeping up towards that trade deadline. Very quietly, we're getting close to that trade deadline. So it's exciting. That's the fun stuff, the minutia we like to talk about. It gives us good content and all that good stuff. So we'll get some results here soon and then be able to break it down.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It does feel like there hasn't been a lot of rumbling around the trade deadline this year, even though it is coming up. But the cap, so many inner workings and maneuvers that teams can pull off with it. So I'm interested to see, but regardless of how it works out, I mean, I think we can safely say that Isaac Newsome did a really good job with his last draft class before handing the keys over to Eric DaCosta. But yeah, the Ravens do have a bunch of tough decisions to make, but it's a good problem to have, all things considered, because it means the Ravens are doing something right with all those players up for big money extensions, it seems like, right now. But Spencer, that's all that I have for you today here. Thank you again for coming on the show. Do you have anything on the docket this week that you're putting out yourself, and where can we find your work?
Yeah, so I've started doing the last couple of weeks on the Baltimore Beatdown YouTube. I'm doing what I call Watch It Wednesday, where I go through and show what I saw as some key plays or some good plays to highlight certain aspects of the Ravens offense, defense, and special teams. Interesting schemes, good plays, bad plays, where guys can improve, where guys have improved. So those are live streams somewhere between 7:30 and 9 o'clock on Wednesday evenings. You can catch those on BaltimoreBeatdown.com on Thursday, and they'll just be on our YouTube after the stream. But if you want to join the stream on Wednesdays, go back and look at the Chargers game. I also have two of those posted for the Broncos and the Colts as well, so you can find those. My Twitter is at Ravens4Dummies. You can always find me there. You can follow Baltimore Beatdown on Instagram. You can follow all along, all that good stuff, whatever. Just go to my Twitter. You'll find all the good stuff. Appreciate it. So thank you very much to everyone who listens to all this good stuff. And make sure to give Kevin his flowers, the guy who gives you the best daily Ravens coverage. Share the podcast with a friend. Give it 5 stars. You know, give the man some love. He's bringing you guys content every day. It's a tough job, and he's doing a great job. So thanks for having me on, Kevin. I look forward to talking some Ravens football again next week.
Yeah, absolutely, Spencer. Thanks so much. And be sure to follow Spencer on Twitter. Tune into the video breakdowns and read his work. You'll learn something, I promise, from Spencer in terms of whether it's Ravens football or just football in general. But that's all that we have for you here today on Locked On Ravens. We'll make it back tomorrow. We'll be diving into our mailbag, so stay tuned for that. And I will see you tomorrow.